The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
You're connected to the Today programme, the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dann with the first of our new weekly podcasts in association with Audioboo. Radio Today's editor, Roy Martin, will be here in a while with a roundup of this week's news and gossip, including this revelation from Celador's Richard Johnson about their purchase of Total Star in Cheltenham.
In all honesty, it's unlikely it will remain Total Star. And so it's whether it becomes Breeze or a Gap. And the answer is...
First, though, let's go to London's West End, up Regent Street to New Broadcasting House. We'll go past the Peel Wing, across what probably isn't called the Entwistle Piazza, and round the corner to Western House. 88 to 91 FM, BBC Radio 2. Well, Bob Shannon, some people outside the BBC accuse its senior executives of not having enough to do. I don't think they say that about you. Let's list your job, shall we? Controller of Radio 2, controller of Six Music, controller of BBC Pop Music, and controller of the Asian Network. Have I forgotten anything?
No, you've got it all there. Thank you, Trevor.
How do you manage to do all those things? Or in fact, don't you?
Maybe I do them all very badly in equal measure. Well, I suppose you have really good people who really do all the hard work for you, I suppose. I'm being flippant, but it kind of is true. If you've got good teams around you and you are really well coordinated and you communicate with one another and you support one another, then a really great team can do an awful lot. And we're very lucky. We have a really strong team of people here.
Now, the first time I visited you in your office here, you had some Rajar figures on the wall. And you said, I've kept that there because they'll never get any higher than that. But, hey, they did.
And I changed it.
They're still there. Oh, those are the latest ones.
That's the new one. You're dead right. It was the first Rajar after Chris took over Breakfast was phenomenal. And I think we all felt it was a kind of a benchmark that probably was brought about by that sort of big change and that we probably wouldn't be able to eclipse it ever again. And the latest Rajars have been fantastic, and they did eclipse it, and they were stunning. And again, they were absolutely driven by the success of The Breakfast Show. And obviously, as all really strong radio stations have traditionally done, building from Breakfast through all of the daytime programmes, they've been extraordinary, extraordinary. And I didn't think we'd be able to reach that. I think that the station is in incredibly good health.
Is it ever a little bit embarrassing that you are so successful?
No.
I know. Sometimes the BBC gets a bit nervous, doesn't it, about appearing to chase ratings?
Sometimes it does, and sometimes it certainly did. You know, and I think if it was just about chasing ratings, then it would be embarrassing. And frankly, that's not what we should be in the business of doing. I think, in all seriousness, we feel really comfortable with that achievement because I think Radio 2 is totally different and distinctive from anything else out there, and more so probably than ever before. There's been a lot of howl round in the past as Radio 2 has reached new highs. And this Radio 2 has merely built on the successes of the previous incarnations under Leslie and Jim. But I feel that this radio network now is different and more distinct from anything else in the market, partly because of what we've done, partly because of what is going on outside of the BBC. And I don't hear a great deal of howl around from people. And I read the comments and I listen to the podcasts and I read the blogs of people who are respected in the media, who've spent most of their lives working in commercial rather than BBC radio, and they're saying this is a phenomenally successful radio station. They're not saying, why doesn't the BBC get Radio 2 off our lawns? Because we're not there.
Here's the thing, though. If you listen to radio consultants, they would say that you're doing all the wrong things. They would say, well, to be a successful station, you have to have a really tight playlist and you mustn't let the DJs talk very much and You must be consistent throughout the day and never have changes, and you mustn't do too much news. And you break all these rules, and yet you are the UK's most successful radio station.
And we're, you know, I know that we're in a very fortunate position. We are well funded by the licence fee. We have a strong FM footprint. We have a very strong production workforce. We're able to work with the best people in independent production. We're able to hire, you know, the most high-profile, successful, accomplished group of presenters. And I think because we can do those things, that Radio 2 can stand out against those norms that you've just described. It's more difficult for other organisations and broadcasters to do what we do, but that's what the BBC's for, I think. And I think our whole mantra is about the pursuit of excellence. It's all about the pursuit of quality and distinctiveness. I am very proud of the fact that Radio 2 is big, because I also feel it's very distinctive. And everybody in this building knows that our whole objective is to be as big but distinctive at the same time as we possibly can be. And I think that continually drives us in a slightly different direction from the way everybody else is going, and that's fine.
Just by the way, you mentioned the building. Why are you in a different building? Here we are in Weston House, next door to the very swanky new broadcasting house. Did you kind of fight them off and say, no, I want to stay here?
Actually, this building was refurbished not that long ago, probably 6-7 years ago, and has a fantastic studio suite on the sixth floor. A lot of work was put into the infrastructure of the building. I think it would have been wasteful for us to have gone and required a whole set of new studio infrastructure in the new building. It's heavily subscribed over there. Some people were bound to need to be in Weston House, so actually the logic is leave us where we are.
It's quite nice, though, isn't it, to be a discreet radio station, or, well, two, three.
I think we do have the best of all worlds here, because there is something phenomenally potent about the vibe of this building for people who work in it, people who visit it. You know what I'm talking about. When you come in here, you do feel you are coming to Radio 2, and then if you're further up the building, you do feel you're part of Six Music. There's something about your own front door which is incredibly potent, but we're also really adjacent to the rest of the BBC. We work really closely now with Radio 1. We're much more aligned with Radio 1 than ever we used to be. We can work really closely with colleagues in TV music, and indeed across the whole of the rest of the organisation. Not having to go down the motorway in order to get to the rest of the BBC is a great advantage. And we have better connections and communications with the BBC in the north as well now, in the infrastructure of the building, which is an important part of our operation. We have, particularly for Six Music, a significant part of Six Music in Salford. So I think we're in a pretty good physical situation. I do think physical location is incredibly important to the well-being of an organisation.
Six Music, then. The story that's normally told is, well, it was just rescued by that publicity campaign. It was going to be closed, then it wasn't. I think that misses the point, which is it actually got a lot better. And I think one of the reasons why its audience is going up and continues to go up is because you're making it a better radio station than it used to be.
Well, thank you very much. I think what that moment did around the potential closure was it kind of came at a time when a lot of people were asking what the purpose of Six Music was. The executive was asking that question, people outside the organisation, people within Six Music. I had arrived within 12 months and felt that we had a lack of clarity of purpose, that there wasn't clarity of a distinctive role for Six compared with Radio 1 and Radio 2, which had a much clearer proposition. And I think what helped out of that campaign was a sense of galvanising spirit and purpose around people. We, in addition to that, made some changes to the personnel. We brought in some people who helped us sort of cement that new purpose and that clarity. And I think Six is an innately confident service now, in a way that perhaps it wasn't always. And confidence breeds confidence, and that breeds success. And that's how these things grow, and they have grown significantly over the past 3 years. It was an extraordinary period of time. We did get, unquestionably, the benefit of the glare of publicity. I think it would be wrong to ignore that. But I do think, as a radio station, it's a much clearer proposition than ever it was before. And we do have some fantastic broadcasters now.
You've been here 4 years. Some people, I think, remember you or think of you as a kind of BBC lifer. But, of course, you did leave the BBC, didn't you, to go and run Channel 4 Radio, which then never launched. Do you think if it had launched, if we hadn't had that recession and Channel 4's business problems at the time, do you think if it had launched, it would have been successful? And if it had been, what would the shape of UK radio look like now?
I think it would have been successful. Of course I do, because that's why I went. I felt at the time Channel 4 coming into radio was the most exciting thing that was going to happen in radio. And for me personally, it was an extraordinary and exciting period of time. It was a sadness it didn't come to fruition. But I know I got an awful lot out of it by leaving the BBC and finding out an awful lot about another part of the broadcasting world and also a lot about myself. I don't think if I would have been here if I hadn't gone to Channel 4. I meet so many people who bemoan the fact that Channel 4 radio didn't happen. I think it would have been a shot in the arm for independent production, without any shadow of a doubt. I think that Channel 4 is built on supporting indies, and my plan was very much to make independent production the heart of the production workforce in Horsefree Road. And I think it would have created a proper rival for the BBC. I think it would have created a sort of public service rival for the BBC in a number of areas. And what was interesting was, although it never actually came to fruition, Channel 4 Radio had an incredible impact on BBC Radio. If you talk to Mark Damaser, who was running Radio 4 at the time, he made a load of changes early because he was concerned about what Channel 4 Radio might be perceived to be doing about the reputation of the BBC and Radio 4. So I think it would have been a success. I think it would have been great for our industry. I think it would have created more of a market. I think it would have created more diversity in output, as indeed Channel 4 did when it arrived in television and was obviously a massive force for creative good. And that's what I wanted it to be in radio.
You mentioned the independent sector, and full disclosure, I'm a member of the Radio Independence Group myself. But you are often accused, I think, of being conflicted in the kind of roles that you have. That on the one hand, you're meant to be encouraging independent production. On the other hand, you have a duty of care to your own staff and you don't want to be making them redundant by giving more work out to independent suppliers. Do you feel that conflict at all when you're making decisions about programming?
I think it's a fair analysis of something that it just in the course of day-to-day work, you just are constantly considering and juggling. There are, across the networks in this building that I'm responsible for, probably 100 people who work in the building, not all of them in radio production or content production, but the majority. But I'm quite pleased that we have a healthy relationship also with the indie sector. And that, you know, getting on for a third of Radio 2 is made by independent... Our hours are made by independent production.
Third of your hours, but not a third of your spend.
Third of the hours, yeah. And I think that I consider those key independent production companies to be partners of the network. You know, I think of them as real genuine partners of our output. And not just providers of content, because that's the way radio works and it's a bit different from the TV model. It needs to feel a little bit more integrated. So I think it is possible to have a healthy, vibrant workforce in-house working alongside indies. I mean, one of my absolute goals for this place is that we unquestionably should be the most dynamic, creative, exciting place to work in music radio anywhere in the world. That doesn't mean just if you work in-house. It should also feel like that as an indie partner of us. It should feel like this is the thing that's the most exciting project to be on. I think that helps feed the success, and that's one of the things we've tried to do over the last few years.
Should Radio 2 have more women on in daytime?
I'm really, really proud of our record in the last few years as far as female broadcasters on Radio 2. I'm equally proud of the success of Daytime Radio 2, which has a male-only lineup at the moment. But Chris Evans, Ken Bruce, Jeremy Vine, Steve Wright and Simon Mayo have all reached record highs. They are more popular than they've ever been with our audience. They're phenomenal broadcasters. And I'm really proud of what they do and that they're there. What I think is really important, though, is that around those key daytime day parts, we are growing a bigger, broader team, because Radio 2 needs to have a great A team and B team and C team of broadcasters upon whom we can call. So every time Chris is away, Zoe is the natural Zep. Every time Ken is away, Claudia comes in. Vanessa comes in for Jeremy. You hear a lot of female broadcasters coming in to take their part as depths in the schedule. And then, of course, Vanessa Feltz has joined us, Joe Wiley has joined us, Lisa Tarbuck's joined us, Claire Balding's joined us. You know, we have a number of high-profile and brilliant female broadcasters around Radio 2. So I think the kind of overall health of the gender balance of presentation is really strong at the moment. And as I say, you know, and the audience loves the station. They love it, and they love coming to this whole collection of presenters, male and female.
Just going back to commercial radio for a moment, you were part of that committee, weren't you? I've forgotten its name now. It wasn't called Radio Centre, the Radio
Council.
The Radio Council, yeah, where you and other executives from the BBC would meet commercial radio executives regularly and chew the fat about things like DAB. Is that still happening, and are you still in contact with your competitors?
Well, I have attended that meeting once or twice, but I wasn't a regular on it. It was something organised by Tim Davey as in his role as director of audio and music, and in his role as a kind of, I think, you know, industry leader who decided that it was in everybody's interest that we start to get together across the sector to talk about the big things that affect us all. You know, it's absolutely was his view that the radio sector needs to grow, and if it grows, we all benefit. And it will only grow if we work together and row in the same direction, which was, you know, actually quite a profound change and an important one. So he formed this group, the Radio Council, and it's an informal gathering of all the key power brokers across the sector in commercial radio and himself in the BBC. To my knowledge, it still meets regularly, and it still discusses these important issues that we need to be aligned on, that government needs to see us aligned on, that audiences and indeed advertisers and sponsors need to see the radio industry aligned on. I think the UK radio industry is incredibly high quality, rich, successful industry, but it's small, and we need to punch above our weight, and the only way to do that is by acting together, and we're actually frankly not very used to doing that, and we haven't always been very good at it, but we need to be.
How do you feel about the return of BBC radio and the abandonment of audio and music?
Well, I think, you know, audio music was an important sign of a particular time when we were all starting to realise that the notion of audio as you know, the kind of core tool of what we do, being just on a linear radio set was a better description because of the nature of where we do. This very podcast is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. I actually think radio is a much richer thing than just audio, and therefore radio is a bigger way of
describing. It's the content, isn't it? It's not the delivery.
Exactly. It's not just about a means of delivery. So I think we've kind of come to a good conclusion that radio now is about the whole content. It's about the whole experience. It's about the engagement of the audience with these brands that we've got that matter so much to them. A lot of our radio is visual. And I think we now kind of are comfortable with that description. So I'm quite pleased.
Just finally, what will you say when you see Jeremy Paxman about his comments about radio people being preoccupied with their pensions?
Well, I think he began in radio, didn't he? I think he began in radio, so I'm sure he was referring to himself. I think it's not a big deal.
Bob, thank you very much for being our inaugural guest on the Radio Today programme.
It's a great pleasure.
The Radio Today programme.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
This is the Radio Today programme, and here's Radio Today's editor, Roy Martin.
This week, James Whale has left LBC 97.3. He's been there on drive time for about 5 years, and Radio Today broke the news of his departure on Monday evening. His last show was last Thursday, even though he didn't know it at the time. He told me it's the first time he's not had a contract renewed when the figures are doing well, and LBC wants the show to sound different in the future.
They don't want to renew my contract because they're taking the programme in a different direction. Possibility that there might be some other programme that I could do for them. Who knows?
Salador Radio Broadcasting has bought what might seem to be the final piece in its southwest jigsaw by taking over Total Star Cheltenham. But Salador Radio boss Richard Johnson told Radio Today the company has ambitions to grow even further. So you never know, that chequebook may remain on the table. But we wanted to know what the plans are for the station.
In all honesty, it's unlikely it will remain Total Star. And so it's whether it becomes a breeze or a gap. And the answer is, we haven't quite decided. We have ideas, but we are undecided as yet.
Colin and Edith are to be reunited at BBC Radio 5 Live for a weekly show about babies. Babies and young people in general are the perfect topic for Colin, as this clip from when he was on Radio 1 proves.
That track makes me feel like I'm standing in my local park in Dundonald about to open my first can of cheap beer and try and touch the boob of the 14-year-old girl that lives next door to me.
When you were 14?
When I was 14. Obviously.
Bob Sinclair.
Finally, Switch Digital Scotland is looking for potential broadcasters who might want to use upcoming available space on its Central Scotland multiplex. If you're interested, anybody from podcasters, hospital broadcasters, right through to global, give Piers a nudge. Piers.Collins@utvmedia.co.uk by the end of the month. That's the very latest. I'm at Roy Martin. Back to Trevor.
Thank you, Roy. Next week, we'll hear more from Richard Johnson. We'll discuss community radio with the chair of the CMA, Andrew David. And we'd like to hear your comments, too. You can email or text them to Radio Today. Or, of course, you can send us a boo. This has been a TDC production by Jamie Taylor. See you next time.
The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.